Welcome to the podcast of the Urban Mystic, the show focused on helping people understand and develop a practice of the presence of God so that they can shift from a relationship characterized by faith and distance to a deep, nurturing, and fulfilling relationship characterized by mutual desire and closeness. This podcast is for anyone who wants an intimate relationship with God. This includes church-going Christians, church leaders and volunteers, and those who consider themselves to be spiritual but not religious. If you enjoy this episode, I invite you to like the episode and leave a comment, to subscribe on your favorite podcast provider, and to contribute to the work of the Urban Mystic by following the link to PayPal in the show notes or the QR code on our website. This week we explore our language and consider the use of parachurch instead of church for the institution and its activities. Next week, we consider our grief in relation to the loss of church as we knew it and ourselves within it.
So, Tim, here we are again, having a lovely, wonderful conversation together. And as per our usual rhythm, we usually have a conversation before the conversation, and we've had lots of back and forth and a little bit of dreaming and some planning and some thinking. And so we're going to kick this episode off talking a little bit about church and parachurch, which are two terms that you chucked across the table to me last week or whatever it was when we were talking and discussing a bit, and we've just been chatting about it now. I'm just going to key that up for you to take over and run with and share a little bit more about what is this church parachurch distinction that you want to talk about. And, well, spoiler alert, it's not for everyone listening perhaps what you might be expecting, because of course we are shaking some things around a little bit, I think, in our conversation. So when you want to talk about church and parachurch now, what is it that you want to talk about? What is it that you want to make distinct and highlight in terms of perhaps a slight movement in our thinking, what might be really helpful? And then I think we'll move on to focus on that reframing and ask the question, what does that really give us if we focus in that direction? So, take us away.
To start with a disclaimer, I met with someone this past week, and they, part of the conversation was them raising the fact that they know that I'm very anti-church. And I responded to say, well, that's a common misnomer. I'm not actually anti-church. I just bring the institution, what we do, into focus. And I feel that we can do with deprioritizing the institution as we know it, and come up with better and more diverse ways to do what it is that we need to do. I really do and am quite fond of gathering with people in a diverse number of ways and for different purposes. And so we just explored that a little bit, and they kept bringing it back to this thing called church. And I found myself trying to help them understand that there's different ways in which we use the word church. And a number of the ways in which we use that seems to legitimize this organization and give it a lot of power. And it actually puts the emphasis on the institution and the institution that gathers and what it gathers people for. And it places that as primary. And they kept feeling like they understood that, but then feeling like they have to justify this thing called church. And I said, well, if there's anything that we should be justifying, it's people in their relational engagement with God.
That's your instead of statement, right?
Yeah.
I was just kind of looking, right, cool.
And so I put it to them that in modern years, like when I was studying for ministry, we bandied around these two terms and we used them in different ways. And the one term was for church and the other term was parachurch. And so the church is, it's the community that gathers, it's the hierarchy, it's the organization. It's the order of service, because we do church, we go to church. The primary language that we have is that there's this institution, there's this building, there's this meeting that we go to, and there's professionals involved, and that's the primary meaning of church. And then in the secondary meeting, the church has always been people, and people have always been gathering. But what's come to the forefront is this institution, this activity, and this primary thing called the service. The Sunday service that we go to is what we go to when we go to church. And then some of the other emphasis then was on parachurch. And you've got all these other institutions. You've got beach missions. You've got Scripture Union. You've got missional organizations. And they're similarly these organizational structures. And they've always been spoken of as though they are parachurch institutions, meaning that they exist to support the church. They exist to help the church grow and do things that the church should be doing, but that the church isn't doing, but they're not properly church. And so parachurch organizations, they don't have the right to really pastor people or to, you know, gather them under their banner to worship and have the identity of a church, because they're a parachurch organization. Only this thing, this institution that we call the church, has the rights and the privilege and can claim the identity to gather people and say, you've got to be a member of us. And to be a member of us is to be a member of this thing called the church. And so as we work with that kind of language, I feel that it's important to go back in history and recognize that in the New Testament, when it uses the word church, it's actually talking about the people and the people that gather. It's not talking about this governing body or this governing institution. The first governing body that's created by this community of people that we would call the church is the institution of the monastery. And they didn't call that the church, they called it the monastery. So we don't have a similar confusion taking place as though the monastery is the true church. And to go to a monastery and be part of a monastic service or a monastic community, that's what it means to be a member of the church. We don't have that at all. We would think of that as being relatively alien language. And yet the second institution created by the people we call the church, they called that institution the church. And ever since, we've had this confusion of language that makes it very hard to speak about the people without speaking about the institution. And it's very hard to speak about the people as though they are legitimate or what they do is legitimate if they're not a member of this thing called the church. And we see that play out in history as this interplay with first this institution that's known as the Orthodox and Catholic Church, that then splits between Orthodox and Catholic. So which church are you a part of? Which is the true church? How do you know you're a member of the church? And then later on, at least within the West, you know, we've got the split between the Catholic and the Protestants. And with that split, it's which is the church? Which is the true church? What is the lineage of the church? How do we know it's a legitimate church? You know, there's all these things that come into play around that. And it's because of the use of the word church as primarily applied to the institution of faith and the governing bodies rather than to the people themselves. And so in some ways, what I've started doing is recognizing that there's a number of abuses that take place in the church. So for instance, if you go back, and I'm not really going to get into it very much, but if you take a look at the recent scandals with things like the Hillsong Church, if it was called the Hillsong Parachurch, there's no ways they could have legitimized themselves in the same way, because they, you know, they've legitimized themselves by drawing on scripture and saying that scripture applies to what they, to their organization. Their organization's the church. You can't speak against the church. You've got to be a part of it. Your money's got to go there. You've got to serve there, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So there's an imbalance of power that is vested in the institution. And that imbalance of power is not legitimate in the way that it's being cast and the way it's being claimed. And so one of the things that I feel is important with this, or to recognize, is that there's a number of benefits that come from this. And I think we can get into them. And perhaps the best one to start with, or at least the one to start with primarily here, is to recognize that it actually promotes accountability. If we label these formal structures as parachurch, it potentially increases the accountability and discourages them from getting away from serving the needs of the community, but also from getting away from the primary purpose that these people gather, and that is to meet with a God that becomes present to them. At the moment, these institutions primarily gather people to grow in numbers and to deliver a message to them. And they feel that in the message, they've done what they've needed to do. So they'll gather people and they either take the mass, you know, as they do primarily in these traditional churches, Orthodox and Catholic. If they've done that and you've given them a message, they've done what the church needs to do. You gather, you take communion, you know, there's worship, there's liturgy, there's other things, but that's primary. And then if you take a look at the modern Protestant church, you gather for people for worship and the message. So as long as you've gathered a lot of people, they've had a chance to worship, you preach at them, you've done what you need to do. And I feel that that gets away from the primary foundation of being people who'd met God, that are gathering together with other people that have met God in order to meet with God. And that's the primary thing. Everything that is done, the gathering, the quality of the coffee that you have, the venue you choose, the, you know,
the stroke.
Yeah. How you go about worshiping, what you go about teaching is for the purpose of facilitating an encounter with a God that becomes present to speak and act. And that's not what takes place in church. That's not what primarily takes place. So I feel that amongst the other advantages, like the shift of the focus towards engagement with God, the emergence of new communities, the emphasis of diversity of kinds of communities and meetings, breaking free from these rigid structures, perhaps even focusing on the shared mission, et cetera, those are benefits that come out. But I think the primary one that comes out is cleaning up the confusion of language that we have and identity, and promoting healthier accountability for these structures. That it's not primarily people that are accountable to these institutions. The institutions primarily accountable to the people. So I'd start there.
So you table a lot of things, that need to be considered and weighed together. The first thought that comes to mind, and I was thinking a little bit of it earlier when we were just chatting in preparation, is I remember a very well, sort of at least actually South African, well-renowned business mentor and speaker, and he talks about three basic elements of business and pattern in progression. He says, first, you have to have a product, something you can take to market that, there's a couple of strands that come off there, but you have to have a product. It has to be sellable. Otherwise, you have nothing. Second, you have to have the right people. And then he said, only third, then, do you add the systems. Because the people are there in a way. So this is a business metaphor, the model is people are there to serve the product and the sale and blah, 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 the business. And the systems are there to support the people. And I never forget one of his major points was you can't out-system people. And I thought, I don't know exactly where I would land with all business theory, but that is completely sound to me. You can't out-system people, right? And it's just, I often think of that within church thing because I think there is a switch around. And it's almost as if those three flip, actually. So you get the systems first. And we've talked often and at length, and I'm not going to rehash all of that, but that the main effort is on protecting, preserving, nourishing the systems. And I think they grow. You can see that with like governments all around the world. Bureaucracy gets to a point at which it calcifies and it starts to kill. And I think you see that in systems and institution life. Church institutions do that, parachurch institutions. I like that switch. And it doesn't serve the people. The people end up serving those systems. And even then, I hesitate to use the word product, but the product there is also subservient to the system. It takes over and there is a over calcification of this kind of bureaucratic, bogged down, overly institutionalized thing that's happening. And when you describe it like that, that's really the first picture that comes up because I really feel that. And so I think, sure, that's a helpful distinction to be able to go. A parachurch organization, then, perhaps at its best and healthiest, exists in an almost, what's the word I'm looking for? In a finite sense to support the church, which would be then the gathering of the people. And I like how you put it. And I think into my I think it into myself. I as person want to meet with you as person, both of us who in my I and your you have had some sort of encounter with the divine other, the divine you. And we come together to form some sort of communal we that is still connected with that vertical connection relationship, also expresses itself in the horizontal and the inward horizontal, if I can just push the metaphor to breaking point, right? The three parts we often talk about, relationship with me, the you and the divine other. And that the parachurch, whatever it is that it offers in terms of, and I use loosely then the word systems, supports that. And the reason I say it's finite is because actually it exists only until it no longer does its function, which is to support the people in the pursuit of that goal. And then it should move, change, etc. But again, I'm not going to rehash that as we've often talked about. I think we very much as people default towards the certainty, the safe, the grounded, certainty, the safe, the predictable, the repeatable, the replicable, and that also it's just systems give you that. The parachurch, talk about that now, provides that very much so and can then become the focus. But for me, it's not. It's a supporting act. And that's kind of what I hear you talking about, if I put my language to it. It's a supporting act that would step back when the star steps forward. And just as the audience is applauding, would applaud as well and go, wow, there's the star. And, you know, even there, I would splice the star again three times. It is the me, me to you, me to divine other. That is the greater sort of big circle Venn diagram of the star happening there. And that it is should be and must be very humble and really understand its role as supporting act and not try to break the leg of the star and take over on, you know, the first night when the lights go on and the curtains come up, but often does that. That's yeah, if I reframe it, what I hear you saying in my language is that kind of distinction. How does that track for you?
That tracks really, really well. I mean, there's a few things that you said there that really, really stand out. I love the language of you can't out-system people. You shouldn't out-system people. And the recognition that corrupt systems actually do, you know, that it becomes about serving the system. And I think one place we really notice that is that often the community that you gather that then plants the church is not the community that stays. And yet the label church is applied to that institution as though, yeah, this is what we were doing all along. And I keep wondering, well, where's the people? Where's the people that were with you? You know, what happens to them? And I think that's the truth, is that the supporting act often does step forward. And with our institution, that is certainly the case. If we're able to find language that helps us put the focus back on the main star, as you put it, we shouldn't be averse to that. And yet I find that this doing church paradigm is so deep seated that the first reflex many people have is to defend that. And so I'd go so far as to say that the offering of this as language and that discomfort that people feel is probably proportional to the amount that they need to recover, that they need to, what would be the right word? I think deconstruction has got too many negative connotations in the modern, you know, in our current context, because that is seen as it's abandoning or giving up faith or anything like that. But basically it's adopting remedial language and sitting within that discomfort of people discovering, why do I need to defend the word church? Why do I need to defend this particular institution? Why do I need to defend these particular structures or this particular way of gathering and its primary activity of preaching? Like, why do I need to do that? Is probably quite helpful in the long run. And I would encourage any of our listeners to actually sit with that and sit with the reflex that they've got and ask themselves, like, what's going on there? Because, you know, we, you know, as you were saying in the earlier conversation, we thought we were going to be speaking about intimacy. And I've kind of bulldozed this in. And I've done it with the purpose of recognizing that the systems and the institutions people are most familiar with don't enable intimacy, and they don't support the main events as the depth of engagement with a manifestly present God, with God that is present in a tangible way. And ways in which we can support that is, you know, just as we have in earlier seasons as well, is we've noticed that the language of intimacy with God, there's this reflexive kickback against it. That when we put the language of encountering God forward, a lot of what comes up is people's mistrust of that and of the language of it. And they respond with what they fear, which they've seen as abuses and they've experienced as abuses that have taken place in this thing that they call church. And so I feel like this, one of the primary healthy things here is recognizing that systems are not the enemy. Institutions is not the enemy. Organizations are not the enemy. but they can become the enemy when they're pathological, when they've become corrupt, when they've become primary, and when they overshadow the actual purpose. You know, and if the purpose is the depth of personal growth, we can enable that in a number of different ways, whether you go see a psychologist or you pick up any number of diverse religious and spiritual practices. There's many different ways to satisfy that. If we don't have the presence of God and yet people are using scripture and worship, then you've got a veneer of it. You've got a version of it, but it's a version that's not leading people to encounter God. And so that becomes unhealthy, no matter how much one bangs on the Bible or bangs the Bible on people, right? So there's different ways in which we're able to unpack those unhealthy dynamics when we've got this healthier distinction between what the church, who and what the church is, which is the people, and who and what these organizing, governing bodies and activities are, which are parachurch services and organizations. But I've probably just rehashed myself there.
No, I like that. It reminds me, there's two, maybe three things that come up there as I listen to you. I'll try and put the first two sort of side by side and then sort of make sense of what I'm thinking. And a lot of the relational work I do at the moment, I look at dynamics between people. And I want to put dynamics alongside on the table next to the word systems, because I'm not a great believer. I think it can look this way, but I don't think that's actually the truth. I don't think systems have a life of their own. I think people give life to systems and allow them to continue. And it's the same with relational dynamics. The dynamic doesn't have a life of its own. It's mutually reinforcing because people play roles and they mutually reinforce these feedback loops between the roles as they play them out. And so then we describe, well, there is a dynamic in this couple, this family, these siblings, whatever it is. But I'll often say when I'm working with families, no, there's three of you. We could describe you as there's one group of three, but we can also describe you as three groups of one. And it's important to keep the distinction there, because the three groups of one are the individuals that come together to create this group of three that form these dynamics. And it's in that interaction, that coming together, that creating, that the dynamic forms. It's the same thing for the systems, because I'm really not a big fan of like, oh, the system this and out to beat the system and whatever. And I think, well, what I say to people in relational dynamics all the time is just stop the dance. The power that the dynamic has is because you keep participating in it. And if you stop the dance, if you change the tune, if you change the steps, something changes, because actually the system, the dynamic, is sustained by the people. And so if I put those two side by side, I think those systems, they look as though they continue on, and they really are, they're powerful things. And so don't get me wrong, dynamics are powerful, powerful things. And I'll say just another thing about them just now, systems the same, but it looks as though they have a life of their own, but they don't actually. And I think some of the distinction here in the language is really helpful, is to notice, oh, okay, if we talk institution, if we talk systems, etc., and we talk church, in some ways it's as if we imbue them with a life force that they don't actually have. And if we were to pull them one step away and say, yes, but the systems, etc., institution or parachurch, these are the things that are the support act, and they take their power, their life force, from you, church people, and the things that you take on that are helpful to pursue this starring role, this main act of the play, this meeting, then they're easier to kill off, to let go of, because we realize, well, where their life force comes from is that they play the supporting role. And so we can move that around and we can change it, and we can judge whether we hold on to them or drop them by how well they're supporting what's going on. It's the same thing in the dynamic, and I say this week in and week out to people often, is just using this picture of this dance. It's just a dance. And there's two of you or three of you or five of you in this dance, and you're good partners because you listen to the music and you know the steps. But you're not good for each other in this because you're such good dance partners. You actually need to be bad dance partners. You need to stop listening to the tune and following the steps and do something else. Maybe you stop. Maybe everybody else is waltzing and you break into a foxtrot. You're going to stand on people's feet, or they'll stand on yours. It's going to feel awkward. It's going to feel disruptive. It's going to feel all sorts of things. But the point is, until you shift, it can be very hard to notice the dynamic you're in, to notice the system, the institution, the parachurch pretending to be church that you're in. And then you do speak about it as if, oh, that's just the way we've always done it. Or my dad is always like that. My mom, my son, my daughter, my uncle, my grandpa, my whatever. Oh, that's just what it is. It's hard from within the dynamic sometimes to observe. I think that's sometimes why people will defend, and I've had people defending really unhealthy dynamics to me, just because I think, yeah, it's terrifying to only know one dance, to only know one set of steps, and somebody comes in and says, what if we turn this off? And even if it's unhealthy, someone will go, I would rather dance a bad tune than not know if I have a tune. And so some of that reflexivity, I think, that you're talking about, some of that reactivity, I think, is there within that sense of, I don't always feel it, but I do know if you say stop, I have an immediate visceral reaction to no, 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 no. So it's as if the system that I imbue with life force would actually come back and attack me like a leech, like a parasite, and go, no, no, it's interesting, parasite, parachurch. And say, no, 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 you can't, I will die without you giving me this force. And it fights back, which is weird because it doesn't have a life force to do that other than what we give it. But I think that actually comes from within us. It's again another way of us giving life to protect ourselves from a new dance, from something different. And I think then it's, yeah, I hope then that it's important that we would be able to see that. And often it does take someone who's not in the dance to come along and go, the hell are you doing? that looks so painful. Why are you all standing on each other's feet and smiling at each other and telling you love each other? You obviously don't. It's really, I mean, at some level, it just feels like madness. But it is madness to say the dynamic has the life and we follow, or the system has the life and we follow. And actually, that's just what it is. And then even worse, I think we imbue it with like the capital L life force. Right, when we talk church and we go, but it has God's life force, God's stamp of approval. And I've heard all sorts of these little phrases that go around the whole, do not forsake the gathering of the saints, and, you know, don't fall away from the fire. One little coal can't protect itself on its own. And the problem with these things, right, is that the best sort of things like that that are unhelpful have enough truth in it to be difficult to distinguish. There's enough there that, yes, one coal out of a fire doesn't survive well on its own. That's a great statement about what it is to be a human being in community. It doesn't necessarily track that if I don't go to your expression of the God stamp, you know, it's interesting. I've never thought of that. Maybe God breathed life into the church as well as the scriptures. It's kind of the view on it, right? That I'm going to die. And so, I think that's even then a co-opting of the God life force to say that the system has this stamp of approval, has this authority on it, that it can't actually die, because I guess a human life force system is finite, but the divine life force, you know, is not finite. Therefore, yeah, perhaps that system, what do they say? On this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail over it. That sounds like it's going to last a long, long time. You can't kill that thing. But maybe we're talking about the wrong thing. So
there's a lot of theologians that are desperately against the idea of panentheism, that God is in the universe, you know, because we've got to maintain the separation. And yet the way they speak about this institution of the church does make God pantheistically present in this institution.
Right. Yeah. And horribly so.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can just picture, I mean, I can picture my prof in systematic theology pulling his hair out at my suggesting that. But that's certainly the way he seems to behave when it came to church.
Sure. Many people, actually, yeah.
Another benefits of this language is that I feel like it's helping me overcome some of the confusions and tensions that arise when speaking about intimacy with God, because some people are very confused about why I support some church leaders and coach them and want to see their communities develop intimacy with God and a practice of the presence of God. And they don't understand how, if I do what I do and say what I do, like, why would I still support them? And then on the other hand, they feel that what they're doing is church, so what I'm doing can't be legitimate in any way or form. And they fight against it in that way. And that's often in preservation of the institutions and where they're at. So I've had a number of people say, we love what you're saying about intimacy with God, we just don't see how it can work because we don't see how it works with church. I feel that moving towards this language helps break down some of that divide, because it brings flexibility back into the picture of saying, well, you've got a community that gathers. Are they gathering and finding fulfilling encounters with God? And are they gathering and experiencing increased intimacy with God? Or 30, 40, 50 years down the line, are they still in a position where they're asking, well, how do you know if you meet with God? And they're asking themselves, how do they know if they hear from God? And if they do, and how they can trust it? I feel like in any relationship, if you hit middle age in life, like a lot of people do, you start asking questions about whether you know what you really want, what you really think, what you feel. After a while in a relationship, you shift from clearly believing early on in your relationship with your romantic partner that you knew them, to the place where you realize that you actually don't. That offers you the opportunity to really get to know them. And I think in the same way in a community, we get a shift from feeling like we've been doing this thing called church and doing it in the right way, to being able to recognize the ways in which it's not working for us. And that then opens up the opportunity of discovering ways together for it to work for us, especially when it comes to this thing called encountering God and intimacy with God. And so I feel like this language of bringing the word parachurch to church then brings legitimacy to, for instance, like some of the smaller groups that I do, where we walk together, where people want to genuinely experience God, but they don't want to do this thing that they've been calling church all along. And the reasons why they don't want to do it is because they don't feel that there's authentic relationship or there's authentic encounters with God. But then they feel like what they're doing isn't legitimate, and yet they're fulfilling all the things of, we're two or three gathering my name, you know, questions are asked and explored, conversations are had, genuine relational connections are being had, and people are making time to wait on God and hear from God. You know, so they're doing all these things, and yet they don't feel that that's legitimate because they're not under this banner of a institution, an organization that's got a label and a historical legacy, you know, on one hand. And then on the other hand, there are these people that do churches that are in the position where they recognize that actually we don't really experience the presence of God. So how do we go about doing that? In what ways can we go about curating experiences? In what ways can we go about shifting the way we do our main gathering, you know, et cetera, et cetera? What kind of teams can we build? Like, what kind of language could we have, and what is it going to be? And so I feel like this language of parachurch brings it into focus of saying these organizations that we're creating and the ways we're going about doing this thing together. Because at the point that we start doing things together and we've got, you know, more than two or three people meeting in an ad hoc way, the minute you start turning into something regular, you've got an organization of some sort, whether that's formal or informal. And so I think it just lends greater perspective to recognizing that what we previously called church, if we call it parachurch, we can recognize it in all of its diverse forms, from formal to informal structures, from structures where finances and constitutions and, you know, property is involved, to ones where they meet loosely and perhaps they do or they don't support an individual, supports the community, you know, in a loose way. You're like, there's a lot of variety between the formal, you know, institution and the completely informal gathering. And this language, I feel, helps legitimate all of those. But in particular, it helps us bring back the focus of, like, what are we doing? Are we looking to repeat? Are we looking to play this dance? You know, like you were saying, are we looking to perpetuate the story of what we think that the community is? Or are we looking to the grassroots as to, are these relationships healthy? And what are these relationships that we're looking for? Rather than, you know, what is this dance that we're trying to achieve? You know, what are the dynamics we're trying to preserve? What is the institution that we're trying to preserve? And that's where I really like the thing that you said, that a community of three is first and foremost three individuals. How did you phrase it? You said a group of three consists of three groups of one.
Yeah, yeah. You have one group of three or three groups of one.
I feel that it takes some of the tension out of the critique that in earlier seasons that we leveled against the church and the way the church meets and does its thing. It takes some of the tension out, at least for me, you know, after a few years. And I'm hoping it's just better language and language that helps facilitate us actually being on the same page. So in the same way that an institution would say, but Tim, Steve, you're not officially ordained here. You've got no authority. We can look back at them and say, yeah, but you've got no authority here either when we do groups or run things. You know, we can play that quid pro quo and it's on even ground because we're both borough churches. But the minute the one group says, yeah, but we're a church and you're not, they're basically entering into a power play. And what I'm trying to do with this is step past that power play and say, I'm not going to play that game. Instead, I'm going to recognize that what you're doing and what I'm doing is actually, we're doing the same thing. We're just doing it in different ways. That doesn't make one more legitimate because you've got a multi-million rand property and, you know, 20 staff. That doesn't make it more legitimate than what I'm doing. You know, if I'm just walking with two or three people once a week and I see people for coffee six or seven times a week, you know, it doesn't make what I'm doing less legitimate, because in reality, you that run that organization are probably doing the same amount of meetings that I am, or similar amount of quality meetings. And if we reduce it to what we're doing at that level, we're actually doing the same work. The difference is I'm not supporting an institution or an organization that's got a label called church. And so there are some differences there. But it does leave us with the flexibility of saying, how effective are either of us or any of us be doing? How are we doing at enabling people to develop a quality relationship with God? And, you know, and does God like what we're doing enough to actually show up and be present with what we're doing? You know, or are we like you're saying, the side show must make way for the main show? But in many situations, if we are the sideshow and we step aside, is there a main show that is going to step forward or not? And if there isn't, it allows us to ask questions around why is that not the case? And I think the minute you put the label church on something and you institutionalize it along that way, you basically lose the legitimacy of that question. And anyone that then questions whether what you're doing is legitimate along those lines, they lose the right, or they lose the opportunity to ask that. And I feel like putting the modifier on and calling them a parachurch brings us back to that. So it's the same. So the movement that I've been a part of, like the Vineyard movement, called Vineyard Churches that we have, but for me to use the language, the Vineyard Parachurch actually brings it back into focus that after, you know, the renewal and so many years of doing it, are we actually doing what we intended to do? Are we still doing that, or have we just become an institution? And in many situations, it's actually just followed the same course as any other institution or movement in history, that after 20 years, the second generation institutionalizes in relation to the first generation. You know, so it's actually that first generation that then institutionalizes. And that kind of stuff we see happening within a movement like this as well. But if we can call it the Methodist parachurch or the Presbyterian parachurch or the Catholic parachurch, it puts them all on the level playing field and says none of these historical and institutional expressions have got a rubber stamped approval as though what they're doing is the right thing to be doing. You know, we get to ask whether we're getting to experience God here or not. And we get to ask why that's not happening, if that's not what's happening.
I'm really intrigued by the word legitimate. It's just really sort of sticking with me as I listen to you speak. And I think, maybe it's just because it's just a word that's unhelpful.
I think it is, but it's one that's been, you know, it's the backbone of every reformation.
Yeah, sure. And that's what I wonder, if it's just, if that's a word that comes from within the dynamic, within the system, right? That then to try to go toe to toe with that, I think then, yeah, it doesn't work. But in terms of leveling the playing fields, as I hear you talking about, I think then, break it down to the smallest moving part, it is the one individual So who's a legitimate individual? Well, guess we all are. We could then ask questions about what is the quality of your being as an individual? How do you experience the quality of your intra-connectedness, the internal sense of the me and myself relationship? What's that like for you? How is the quality of your relationship with other people? What is it giving to you? What are you giving to them? And there's some of the metrics that we could ask. Could I say, do you have a legitimate friendship? No, you have a friendship, but perhaps you would want a better friendship or a different friendship. Perhaps you don't give enough in your friendship, or you don't take enough. You don't receive enough. What's the quality in your relationship between you and God? It's not simple. I mean, it's an easy metric, but measured over time, what is that quality? And if you did that with somebody else, what would the quality be like? What is the foundational experiential quality of you with you, you with another, you with the divine other, you with another with the divine other? Because then, to an extent, then the numbers don't matter, actually, because if there's a million people in one area doing that, exploring the qualitative question, it's no less or more legitimate than two or three people doing it somewhere. Do you know what I mean? And I think there is kind of what I hear you saying. If I'm just trying to I'm trying not to be too, what's the word? I'm semantic here. But I just, that legitimacy, it kept leaving a bad taste in my mouth and thinking, oh, I mean, that's just a system term in a way that says, oh, well, you're not as good as me. Oh, but that's a very weird thing to say, because that's almost like one thing. Sorry, I can suddenly just think of Dr. Evil here from Austin Powers. That's a strange thing for one dude to say to another dude, is the line that comes to mind. But it's like, that's like something one system says to another system. But you kind of want to take a step back and go, hey, you can't speak because you're not alive. So there's nothing there to talk. And by the way, if I'm not trying to worship a system and build a system by priority here, then you're not speaking to anything. But you could speak to me, the person there within the system, the whatever, the head of that parachurch movement, that board member, that reverend, that priest, that pastor, that whatever. You know, and we could have a conversation about you and me. And I don't need to worry about this thing of, is this legitimate or not? Because I'm not worried about whether I'm a legitimate human being or not, because apparently I am. Yeah, and that's challenging sometimes, because I don't always feel great. I don't always feel legitimate. Very aware of my own woundings and failings and stupidity and blindness and willful ignorance sometimes and all sorts of things. And if you were to point that out to me as another person, that would be very hurtful. But I don't think you can remove my being from me. There's no question of legitimacy here. So actually, that would be a system-to-system, toe-to-toe kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? And some of what I hear you saying, and if I'm taking it a different direction, then say, but I almost hear an argument towards, if we could break it down into, well, it's a three groups of one, and look, there's 100 groups of one together. What's the difference? Nothing if you can measure quality of relationship, because then there's an immediately, I don't want to say equal, because it sounds like I'm trying to play the legitimacy game. It's not that. It's just a very common space to interact. But I would imagine that may be a bit foreign, perhaps, if there's more sort of the system language that takes the form. And it's also just so easy. It's so easy. Are you not legitimate? Oh, good for you. It's such an easy go-to. It really is. And if I'm perfectly vulnerably honest, I would say, man, I play that game a lot. I really have. And I think I still. I look at certain people and think, if I have to use this language, oh, you're not a legitimate person. You're different than me, worse than me, dumber than me, whatever it might be, all sorts of different levels of things. But it's actually a real challenge to think, oh, wow, there's just another human being just like me. Let me not talk to whatever, you know, I don't know, caste, race, nationality, language grouping, background, economic, social, all those sorts of things can actually cloud away from me going, hello, person, I'm a person. And wow, we could judge the quality of how we're doing by the quality of our relationships. That for me, I feel is like a big, big like North Star pointer in terms of what I think we're trying to achieve is, so if we want to make any judgment, let's judge on the quality of the relationship and see where that takes us. Because that's not a judgment of like you're in or you're out, you're good, you're bad. That's a quality judgment that says it could be better. It could be healthier. I could be happier. I could be more fulfilled. I could be more connected. I could be more open to my own pain, my own failings, my own sense of me as my interconnectedness and yours. And make allowance for that, noting that we all have our own stuff, but not give you permission to act like an idiot out of your pain, but not dismiss your pain and say, grow up, don't be in pain. Be a big boy or girl, whatever it is. Anyway, it was a bit of a brain fart. I was just thinking about that term and thinking, oh man, it does sound like something one dude says to another dude, system to system.
I find it very hard not to be drawn into the fight around legitimacy because it's just raised so often.
Yeah, it's painful.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, I visited a church plant. It's down the road from me. So I thought that they had a half past nine start and I timed perfectly so that I would arrive and be anonymous. But they had a 10 o'clock start, so I was everything but anonymous because it's only the volunteers that were there to make stuff happen that were there, and I was the lone person that came in. So obviously, I just got targeted by everyone. But the number one refrain that they had throughout the whole event was around how biblically centered they were, and everything was so biblically centered, and they had to check to see if I was happy that they were so biblically centered. How biblically centered am I, and is what I do really biblically centered? And that just repeated through everything. I found my diplomatically facetious way of responding. Because they basically had said that, you know, it's not about having a direct, immediate relationship with God. It's having a relationship by faith, which means reading the Bible. And that's how you have a relationship with God. And then they tried to check to see if I was as biblically legitimate as they were. And I said, well, you know, if you've only got half a foot in the Bible and you've got this as an incomplete message, which is quite dangerous, then I think I'm at least as biblically correct as this. And so I find myself consistently getting irked and having my hackles rise and stooping low to fight. And I feel like this language of parachurch it diffuses even the one to fight and allows me to recognize that people are just schooled into this, but we're on the same team, even if we're really stuck on that. But it's a way to then say that whether we're working with institutions or we're working with people that really don't want to be institutions, actually, whatever we're doing in the way that we're trying to organize and serve people, we're actually on the same team when our focus is intimacy with God and the quality of relational engagement between people in relation to themselves, other people, and God. I really like that because, as you say, it takes the focus off the idea of legitimacy and who's right, who's wrong, who's in, who's out, and says, actually, a relationship exists, but what is the quality of that relationship? What is the quality of the relationship between the individual and their own self, between the individuals and other people around them? And what about the individuals and God or the community and God? Like, where is that relationship at? And so it allows us greater flexibility and freedom to draw from people that are doing that and doing that in a good way. And it allows other people to draw from us in ways in which we're doing a good thing. And I think it creates much more of a same team thing for people that are caught in between, trying to figure out who do they draw on to satisfy their need and desire and hunger for God if it's not being satisfied. I'm liking this, even if I feel like it's going to be clumsy and problematic for a lot of other people.
Yeah, I do think clumsy and problematic possibly, but also that's a part of opening up some new directions. And I think as I'm thinking about it, that also feels a bit clumsy and problematic. I'm trying to think through some of those things. I do really love what you say. You encapsulate that so well. A relationship just exists. and it's there. It started somewhere and it requires some work to keep going. But actually, I've been witness to quite a few relationships that require very little and they keep going. And when I've pressed in and people have allowed me, because that's a big part of that, to press in and ask some questions, there have been reflections on maybe I would want something more, better, healthier, happier, more fulfilling, whatever it might be. But it's not that there was nothing there. Even if it was very damaging, it was still a relationship. The relationship just exists. And we can use that, I think, really as a doorway. But one step previous to that, what I'm finding helpful about your reframing of church and parachurch is because the focus is then on the people. If I try to get to the relationship side, relationship just exists, and then what it can offer us, the trajectory towards intimacy, health, connection, attachment, blah, 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 blah. I don't know if the systems help us there as the doorway. They can support, most definitely, and we need them, I would say. I would say also very, very carefully and also categorically, we do need systems as humans. I think that's part of our flourishing and our function when we have systems. It's also to our detriment when they become stunted and old and no longer helpful, etc. So, I've just finished this with my youngest. One of the systems that she had in her life was wearing nappies, diapers. At some point, you grow out of that, and it's good to leave that behind, and it's important, and we actually train for that. But systems are very important, crucial. But I don't know. I'm not convinced. Systems first, relationship second. I don't think that that works. Relationship first, supported by systems, I think is a healthier way to look at it. And so the church-parent-church distinction is helpful because it can keep focus on people. Where people are, is potential for three different relationships. Housed within that one person is the potential for three different relationships as both giver and receiver. The parish church must help that happen, healthier and healthier, better, better, etc. Or could get in the way. And we notice when it gets in the way, and we change, we do something else. Or we use what it offers to keep doing that, to allow the star of the show to really take center stage. Relationships just exist. Yeah, that's really helpful, the church parachurch thing.
If you enjoy this episode, I invite you to like the episode and leave a comment, to subscribe on your favorite podcast provider, and to contribute to the work of the Urban Mystic by following the link to PayPal in the show notes or the QR code on our website. Thanks for joining us for this episode. We'll catch you in next week's episode of the podcast of the Urban Mystic.